Once again, we're joined this morning by Dr. Nancy Nielsen. Good morning to you, Doctor.
Good morning, Jay.
Well, Doctor, obviously there's always a lot to talk about when it comes to the coronavirus, something that is not going away by any stretch of the imagination, yet a big decision awaits a lot of school districts, and that, of course, is whether or not to reopen in the fall. Let's get it from your perspective as somebody who focuses on public health. What should schools be considering? How should they approach the reopening of schools?
Well, I think we can do a few things. We can look to experts. We can also look to the experience in some other countries to try to help us guide what we're going to do. There have been several expert opinions that have recommended reopening, particularly for kids in grades kindergarten through five and those with special needs. And there's a reason for that. I mean, this was just not willy-nilly. Children under 10 are less likely to get infected, and if they do get infected, they're less likely to transmit it to others. Whereas kids who are older than 10 get infected and transmit the virus at about the same rate as adults. Now, they do usually have mild symptoms if they have any. But there's never zero risk, and we have just seen in the past week that there were seven minors in Florida who have died of coronavirus. So, you know, teenagers, we have to be very careful about, and if anybody saw the media reports about a Georgia school reopening, it was just amazing. Nobody was socially distanced. Nobody was wearing masks. It was the usual kind of fun school picture, and we're going to get in trouble if we have that sort of thing happen.
Okay, Dr. Nielsen, let's look into the specifics. What needs to be in place for schools to reopen, in your opinion?
First of all, you have to have a low rate of infectivity. We do have that in Western New York. Once you've got that, then what the school districts have to do is reconfigure their space so that kids can be socially distanced. And you've heard so much about that. What you probably haven't heard as much about is cohorting the kids. And the reason for that is if you keep the same group of kids together with a teacher in a room, which of course you can do more easily in elementary school than later on, then if somebody becomes positive, you can either isolate or quarantine the kids in that group, and you don't have to shut down the whole school. So that's really important. And the other things that we need to be worried about are masks and hand washing and disinfection and all of that. But I do feel for school superintendents who listened to the governor this week, who spent all his time talking, most of his time talking about testing and the problems that we have. And we really do have problems with testing. And the reason the school superintendents are concerned is the guidelines from CDC and from the state ed department do not require the schools to do the testing. They require them to have a plan for what happens if somebody's positive. So I feel for these school superintendents, and I would say stay tuned to see what the governor is going to say on Friday.
The idea of getting schools reopened, how important do you feel it is, even if it is on maybe a limited basis where perhaps students are going a day a week or 2 days a week and the rest are online? What do you think? Is it important to try that, to find a way to get that done?
Yes, it is important. I think everybody who's looked at this agrees that it's important to try to reopen the schools in some fashion. Now, if I were a parent of a school-age child, my kids are older now, but if I had a school-age child, here's what I would advise any parent. You know, get involved so you know what your district is planning and, frankly, so you can influence it. It's going to be very hard for school districts. I don't know how they're going to afford it, frankly, in terms of the busing, the changing of the spaces, trying to deal with union contracts and trying to accommodate teachers who have health risks of their own, that the schools have to allow them to do telework and somehow modify their jobs. So this is a tough one, and I think as a region, we really have to work together. It doesn't do any good to start yelling and accusing anybody of not taking safety as the first consideration. I think everybody knows that that's the first consideration.
There are other examples, though, aren't there, internationally, about how to approach things, what can happen if they're not done right. What do you see?
It's really very interesting. If you look at some countries that are kind of comparable to each other, for example, if you look at Sweden, where there's about 10 million people, they made a decision early on to stay open. Nobody wore masks. I mean, basically, the strategy's been called, well, let's all get herd immunity as quickly as possible. Well, in reality, that did not work at all. They had thousands of deaths. And you compare that with Hong Kong, which is a little bit smaller, about 7.5 million people. But everybody wore masks. They closed they closed schools in March and then reopened them in June. And then it's really very interesting. Hong Kong only had 42 deaths. So that's important. Now, those are small countries. But if you look at other countries, Japan, which we're about 2.5 times the size of Japan, Japan kept their schools closed in March and then they reopened them. And then this past week, they've had a resurgence of cases and they may reclose. Same thing happened in Israel. Israel reopened schools, then closed again. So the way I look at this is a dance. We have to take some steps forward and some back, and we're going to have to decide when we keep going, when we reverse, and frankly, when we stop.
Dr. Nancy Nielsen, as always, thanks very much for your time.
You bet.